everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Rick and Eric.
Good morning, Eric.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Never better. Never better.
We got a couple of neat things to talk about today. Rick went to Florida. I went to Austin. We're going to talk about grow lights and cataracts. Very interesting. Staining wood, maple syrup, and we got a viewer mail from Clyde's Garden Chart.
Okay. I like Clyde's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went down to Florida. You're like a snowbird, kind of?
Kind of. My little brother and his wife are down there, and so they're over in Venice. And so we went down for a couple of weeks and just got out of the cold and nasty and saw a little bit of bright sunlight. And it was actually wonderful just to, to go visit the sun.
Just kind of recharge.
Yeah, recharge a little bit, get out of the gloom. This area, it doesn't get much snow. We get a lot of ice storms, but it can stay gray for weeks and weeks at a time. It's just that kind of geographic feature around here. So I really like to go visit the sun, and I am a kind of a sun worshiper. So, you know, all of our assignments in the Navy, most of them were tropical, and that was by intent.
Yeah. Good for you.
And you got back from Austin.
Yeah, I am part of the Saturday Six blogger group with Troy Built, the company that makes outdoor power equipment.
Right.
And they... it was a paid gig. We went down for kind of a yearly get together, and they fly us all down to some warm area, and we check out their new products, and we eat some food, and we did a community project as well. We were down there, and we spent one day helping out with the Austin Parks Department reviving a community garden on one of their larger parks, and it had kind of fallen into disrepair. I don't really know that. I would imagine from budget cuts, but I can't really say it officially for sure. But it was neat because we were there. These kids from the AmeriCorps were there.
I think. Oh, really? Yeah.
It's the Civilian Conservation Corps working with AmeriCorps. I wasn't quite sure of, but they were neat kids. They just got out of high school, and they were a lot of them were taking a year of service, which I really liked. And then we met with the head forester of the Austin City Parks, and he quickly grasped that us Troy Built gardeners knew how to prune trees, and they had a bunch of fruit trees there, like semi-dwarf and dwarf fruit trees. And once he realized we knew what we were doing, he just let us prune trees, and they really needed to be pruned.
Oh, wow.
So that was cool. And then the AmeriCorps kids dug holes and planted trees, and we built some new raised beds, and Troy Built, working with Planet in Action, which is a newer environmental group with some people from Keep America Beautiful moved over there. It was kind of just a neat day. It was amazing when you get like 15, 20 people together and a couple people organized it ahead of time, just how much work you can get done. And it looked great afterwards. So it was nice.
Well, good on you and good on the kids. Good on Troy Built in the city of Austin. It takes a lot of effort. I know in our master gardening group for Norfolk, it takes enormous amount of effort to just organize a rehabilitation of a garden or to clean up. We've been putting in kind of overflow wetland so we can drain out the pollutants and whatnot before it hits the bay. And I've been doing a lot of that kind of work. And it's really, it takes a lot of planning and a lot of coordination to make something like that happen. So good on everybody.
Yeah, it was neat. And I learned more about this group called Planet in Action. They work with local groups to facilitate all sorts of, I would say, pro-Earth stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, Austin's kind of a hotbed.
It is. It's an interesting town. It is the land of food trucks.
I didn't know that.
We stayed in a really nice hotel. I was like, ooh-wee. But like right around the corner was this area of small homes. And most of the homes had been converted either into seasonal restaurants or the front yards were full of food trucks.
Oh.
And it was right near the convention center. If anyone is near or been to Austin, I was one block, I think, kind of northwest of the convention center itself, and kind of on the way to the airport. And you just walked around, and there was like the best tacos anywhere. And I'm like, well, I don't know about that, because the tacos in my neighborhood are pretty good.
All the refugees going there.
But it was a very, very pedestrian-friendly town. They have bike lanes. They have a light rail system. They have a really neat set of hiking or walking paths that go along. I don't know if it's a river or a lake that goes through Austin. So
called,
it's nice.
Called Town Lake, isn't it?
I could be wrong.
I
had a map and I walked around. I just like to walk around.
Yeah, it's been a very long time since I've been to Austin, and it has grown, I understand, just tremendously since then.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't recognize it at all.
Well, speaking of recognizing, you have had your LED grow lights, which I've been jealous of, because I've got my fluorescent shop lights with salad greens growing. And then you discovered something here.
Well, I'm not going to indict them directly, because, you know, it's kind of iffy right now. But my vision fell off recently. And yesterday I went to the optometrist, and it turns out my vision went from about 20/20 to 20/100. So about 80 points there I lost in within about maybe 6 to 8 weeks. And it turns out that my grow lights, and I had forgotten this because I've been sitting in the room with them and they've kind of been glaring at me because I've been starting a lot of tomatoes and stuff. They have UV LEDs on them. And we began to think that maybe it was excess exposure to the UV light that is now affecting my cataracts. They tell me I'll have to have cataract surgery in 6 months to a year now.
Wow.
To replace them. So I hadn't thought about it. Happened to you are almost always the things you do to yourself. I have been, you know, spent a lifetime outdoors, sailing, you know, down the tropics, flying, that kind of stuff. And I have always bought the very best sunglasses I could find, and gotten all the UV protection and everything. And then I sit in this room. I've been working really hard on a project for about the last 8 weeks, less the trip to Florida. And I think I did this to myself. So if you're getting these lights and they have UV in them, the UV, plants do need a little bit of UV to grow properly. But mostly these UVs were put in there to kind of sanitize, to keep bacteria and virus and that kind of thing from growing. And it's a good idea, but you don't need to sit in a room with them. I'm going to buy a grow tent and set it up, or I'm going to build a grow box out in the garage and put these lights in it so that the light is contained and it doesn't glare in my eyes. And if somebody bought these things, I can't say they were Galaxy grow lights. I got them at Amazon. They're great grow lights, and they have been working like gangbusters. But
they do emit a UV light.
They do emit a UV light. Probably you should protect yourself from it. But I can't say that's exactly what's happened, but it was just such a precipitous drop in vision that something had to be triggering it, they think. And this is about the only thing I've done recently other than travel to Florida, where I wore my sunglasses all the time. Yeah. So
in Austin, I put sunscreen on everywhere, and again, I was wearing my shorts and a T-shirt, and for some reason, I got sunburned on my calves because I forgot to put sunscreen on there. And I was like, you know, I don't have the biggest calf muscles, but I guess they stuck out a little more than the rest of me. And then so it was just, I'm like, why do my calves burn? I'm like, oh,
I'm sunburned.
It's interesting. I imagine that then LED lights that are sold for indoors are UV filtered then.
Probably so. These are special.
Those are a specific grow light.
Yeah, these are specific grow lights. They have and you can get LEDs in all different parts of the spectrum. And like there are 7 different spectrums covered in just the red side with LEDs in this light. And there are some on the blue side, and I forget how many there are. But then they added some infrared just for a little bit of heat, and then these UV ones. And it's the UV that got me, I think. So, you know, you can buy them in all kinds of configurations. And this it's a great grow light. It's just something you don't need to sit in the room with.
Interesting. Wow. I had never thought of that. That's really good that we brought that up. I'm sure we'll hear from some people. I imagine there's a UV light specialist listening, I would hope.
Well, maybe so.
For our vast audience.
Yeah. And I could be absolutely wrong about the correlation there. You know, correlation is not causation. And I'm always aware of that. But it just something to think about, at least, and be careful with it.
Hey, would you like to get Garden Fork in your email inbox every week? I put out a newsletter once or twice a week with more Garden Forky stuff, videos, what's new in the podcast, pictures of the Labradors, just, you know, more of Eric, if you like that. Eclectic DIY is what I call it. You can sign up on our website, gardenfork.tv. If you're listening to this on iTunes, in the show notes is a link to sign up. Or if you send an email to news@gardenfork.tv, that's news@gardenfork.tv, it'll send you back a link, and you click on that, and you can sign up. So once again, get our email newsletter once or twice a week. It's Eric, kind of a brain dump of what's going on, links to videos, other cool stuff. All right? Thanks. Did you watch my video on how to stain wood?
You know, I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
I hear it's getting rave reviews, though.
It's who knew that staining wood would create so many comments on a video, but clearly we have some woodworkers that watch the show.
Yeah. And so tell me about it, because I like to say I have not seen it yet.
Well, I have some, there is a doorway in our Brooklyn house that used to have pocket doors. It was the parlor. It was the front parlor of the parlor floor. And the two parlors are separated by pocket doors. And then the front parlor is separated from the hallway by another set of pocket doors. Well, all these pocket doors were ripped out at some point because this thing's 110, 120 years old. And they had put in some French doors, which have the glass panes in them. And we didn't want that. We wanted solid doors. And I couldn't really afford oak sliding pocket doors.
Right.
And the French doors already had hinges on them. So I replaced the French doors with a panel door made out of pine, which isn't, you know, it's different than oak. It had oak, it has oak trim and it looks nice, but I was like, I just can't afford oak doors, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So they needed to be stained, and I really avoided it for a long time. And then it was suggested that I finish that project. So I,
by the camera operator?
I took him downstairs, yeah. And I was like, well, let's get this done. And I found that a lot of woodworkers will make flawless stuff, and then they really sweat the staining or the finishing of the wood.
Right.
And I was like, well, we just got to do this. And I had stained wood before. I had done some other tables and stuff. And what I have learned is that when you're doing pine, you have to use a stain conditioner on the wood, or the stain will look quite blotchy. Sometimes it's a very subtleness, sometimes it's very obvious, but it just doesn't look right. So I just have to take the time and do a preconditioner, and then you stain it, and you do two coats of stain is what I usually do. What I found is a lot of people lay the stain down and they rub it off right away, and I don't think that's the way to do it. The instructions on the can say leave it on for 5 to 15 minutes.
Right.
And if you rub it off right away, you're taking most of the stain and most of the color out. And I used a red mahogany stain, and I found that on the second coat of stain, it really got much more red. It was kind of interesting how the tone of the stain changed. And then I had a little bit of a hiccup with it. There were these weird splotches anyway, which...
I remember seeing a picture of that before we left town.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That looked a little strange.
And... there was quite a bit of conversation about what caused that. And a lot of people thought that some sort of liquid had been splashed on the doors while they were at the manufacturer or at the store before I bought them.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was because of my own mistake. So I just had to sand the doors down again and start over. So I became acquainted with my belt sander again. And then I polyurethaned them, and they actually came out quite well. But it just, it'll probably take 2 or 3 times longer than you think it will. But the key is to let the coats dry well before applying another one. And this is one episode where I actually read the directions before I started. It was really does make a difference with stain and polyurethane.
You know, talking about directions, a few weeks ago, I guess the last time we talked, I talked about redoing the edges of a French door where a visiting beagle had just chewed them up.
Yes.
And I mentioned a product, and it dawned on me later, I really didn't say enough about it. It's Elmer's Damaged Wood Repair System, and it's a two-part epoxy that you knead together with your hands and then form to replace a big piece of wood that's missing. And one of the things that you directions, when you mentioned directions, that's what got me thinking about it. The directions on this epoxy are almost nil. There's almost nothing there. Just kind of, you know, mix it together in equal parts and apply it. But when I went to the Amazon website and read the reviews, there were tons of readers' comments about this epoxy and how to make it better. And one of the things that they said, you know, you can add water to it and lengthen your working time, but it makes it more pliable and easier to shape and that kind of thing, which is one of the problems I was having. It was really clunky, chunky kind of feeling.
So it's like almost like Play-Doh and you add a little water to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I smoothed that stuff out. But, you know, kudos to the people who spend their time writing reviews on different sites like, the Orange Store or the Blue Store or at the Amazon site. Go and look and see what other people are saying about this. And lots of times you can get some great how-to ideas for free, people telling you about their experiences with it. So I didn't feel good about the directions that were on the box because they were pretty scarce. But what I found out from the people at Amazon really helped.
Cool. Interesting. Also, be careful. There are some product reviews on Amazon that are written by people that never purchased the product. They are paid reviewers.
Right. I was actually kind of looking for the people that, you know, said, you know, I had trouble working it and, you know, this kind of thing. You know,
that's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of ignore the, boy, this is a great product. You know, that doesn't tell you very much.
No. There's Amazon is instituting a thing where if someone leaves a comment or they answer another person's question, it'll say verified purchaser.
Right.
So, I mean, for the glue thing, it isn't a big deal, but I just thought I was researching vacuums and there were these, some reviews just sounded a little too much like, like a brand pitch, you know?
Oh, yeah. it'll do everything for you.
And they were using these long sentences with a lot of keywords. And I'm like, this sounds like some keyword spamming here. So,
but anyway, it really helps other people if you take time to write a review. And particularly if you discover things about a product that aren't mentioned in the directions about how to use it or your experiences with it. That's I try to write a review on Amazon of almost everything that I buy just to let people know, because that's the whole point of social media.
There you go. Hey, real quick, we didn't talk about this, but in your notes here, you said something about starting tomatoes, the garden gem.
Ah, yeah. Let me get back to my Skype page here. There we go. Yeah. Of course, going back to my grow lights, right now I've started tomatoes. And we talked about this several months ago, but I just wanted to remind people, for a small donation to the Florida State University Klee Labs, K-L-E-E Labs, you can get these new hybrid seeds from them, Garden Gem, and there are several other varieties they have developed. There was a write-up several months ago, probably the end of the summer, about how these were the very best tasting tomatoes anyone could imagine. And the only problem with the Garden Gems is they're a little bit small, but they have done a larger size now. And for a $10 donation, they'll send you several packages of seeds. And they're supposed to be blight resistant, which is a big issue in my house. And then they're supposed to be great tasting. And so I've got a bunch of seeds in a tray right now, warming them on a pad, and they have just broken ground, and I put a light on them. So I'm going to have some great tomatoes, I hope.
Yay. So we will link in the the show notes here. If you're listening on iTunes, if you just tap the Garden Fork logo that displays while the show is playing, it flips to text, the text description of the show. And we will link in there. If you type in Florida State University Klee Labs Garden Gem, I would imagine it will show up.
Yeah, as well. It'll show up.
Neat. And we so got so I did a video on seed starting because I always get a lot of questions about that in the spring. And I think a lot of people start with the best intentions and end up with not very good seeds. And like almost a year ago, Rick sent me this cardboard thing that looks like a cardboard slide rule. It's about 8 inches wide and about 4 inches tall and has a bunch of graphs, little chart spreadsheet looking thing. And it's a garden planning calendar, and it's brilliant. And I was talking about seed starting, and I'm like, oh, I need to tell everyone about the chart that Rick sent me. So I put it in the video, and then the guy that makes it, Clyde, and he sells it online, wrote me an email. And he's converted it into an iPhone app as well. So it was pretty cool.
Right.
And he said he got quite a few inquiries, he called them, based on our video. So that was fun.
That's terrific. Yeah, this Clyde's Garden Planner is, like you say, just a slide rule like there. And what you do on one side is mark your average last frost date. On the other side, you mark your first frost date. And then you slide to the calendar part and put it under that. And then there are a list of tomatoes and all the different vegetables you grow on both sides. It tells you when to seed them, when to start them, when to plant them, when to harvest them. It's kind of an average because some varieties are a little different, but it really gives you a good view of how to, when to start, because that's always my problem. I either start my seeds too early or too late, and it's geared for the latitude where you live. And so it's really a terrific planner, and they're very inexpensive. I hand them out as gifts to a lot of friends.
It's really brilliant. It's so you can use it to plan when to start seeding in the spring and also for your fall crops. And you literally flip the thing over for spring and flip it over again for fall. Plus it shows how many seeds or plants per 10-foot row in ounces, planting depth, distance between rows or hills, distance between plants after thinning. It's beautifully simple, but super handy. You don't have to be looking a bunch of stuff up on the web, and it's hard to get answers on the internet a lot about when you're wanting a specific answer. And this thing answers a lot. It was really, it's clearly a guy who's passionate about it. He put this together.
Yeah, I put a hole in the top corner of one side, and I just keep it on a nail in my my office next to my desk, just so when I'm thinking about planting or when I'm thinking about particularly succession planting, how long does it take for a new row of a new crop of lettuce to grow, that kind of thing. You know, you can just kind of work it out real easily. And so I'm thrilled with it, and it's kind of low tech, but I'm appreciating that about it.
It's beautiful. You can go to Clyde'sVegetablePlantingChart.com. That's Clyde'sVegetablePlantingChart.com, and get one for yourself.
That's right. And we don't get anything for saying that. It's just a great little product.
I used to work in the printing world, and to make this happen on a small scale. Because the cardboard has been what's called die cut.
Right.
It looks like it's been die cut. And for the two pieces of cardboard to integrate together, this is a lot of work.
It is. And it's a kind of thing. You know, I looked into having a die cut for Garden Fork, and I thought maybe we can sell these, you know, on the side or something. And it was so expensive, and we'd have to buy so many that it just wasn't practical. But for just to have the Garden Fork logo on them, so I was glad to buy one and send you one. I share them with all my friends.
That's funny. Because when Rick sent it, I was like, what's this? But then it's always later while I realize the brilliance of it, you know? I'm like, that Rick guy is smart.
No, that Rick guy is lazy. That's the reason. I'm the laziest gardener in the world.
Oh, we forgot to update on maple syrup, but I've been getting so many more inquiries about making maple syrup this year than other years. It's pretty amazing. And I've gotten three different guys to send me pictures of the evaporators that they have built based on the file cabinet evaporator that I made. The season this year was a little wonky because it was very warm early and then it got really cold.
Yeah.
And then it got warm again. So the season was short and I got enough sap. I didn't really want to boil anymore, but the amount of questions I got was pretty amazing. And it's interesting, but also frustrating. I keep on getting the same question. Well, how much syrup do you get out of one tree? And I'm like, well, it depends on the tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's is the tree in full sun? Is it in the woods? You know, if your sugar maples are in a forest, they're going to put out less sap than if the tree is standalone in a yard. If the tree is along a road, it's different. It's different even more because roads warm up faster than yards do and forests stay colder than yards. And it just depends on the diameter of the tree and the health of the tree.
Yeah, the whether it's on the upslope or the downslope.
Completely. And then they're like, Well, you know, how long does it take to boil? I'm like, longer than you think.
Yeah.
And longer than you want. Because one woman emailed me and said, oh, I watched your videos and my kids and I are in the yard and we're boiling and we've been doing it for 12 hours. I'm like, yeah, keep going.
Yeah.
it usually takes me 2 days to boil down, you know, probably, 40 to 50 gallons of sap.
So, wow.
But the evaporator is perfectly sized for pallet wood. So I was using my pallet breaker that we have a video about that I just made a couple of weeks ago.
That was actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah, I can't say I invented the pallet breaker or the file cabinet evaporator, but I improved on both of them, and I credit the people that did make them. But the pallet wood is perfectly sized to fit into the four-drawer metal filing cabinet. And I collected probably 20 pallets plus some other scrap wood, and I didn't burn them all. I was really surprised about the small amount of wood I did go through, but man, that evaporator fires up hot. So,
well, your filing cabinet evaporator, is it because the metal is so thin, does it burn through eventually?
Over a couple of years, it probably will, but this is the second year, and I also left it out all summer. I didn't cover it or anything.
Mm.
It just sat out there. And it does have rust on it. But I'm actually going to make a new one. And it's killing me because I was in the city the other day. And I was walking down a sidewalk. And someone threw out a legal drawer size, 4-drawer or 5-drawer file cabinet. And I was like, how do I get this to Connecticut? You know? And I was in a different neighborhood. My car wasn't nearby and I can't lift a file cabinet by myself, you know?
Right.
So I had to let it go, but I'm going to get a legal size file cabinet cause it has a larger surface area and I'm going to have an evaporator pan made, by one of the local welders here. So, I'll be able to boil more sap faster cause you kind of burn out on boiling sap after a while.
Yeah. Particularly if you're not a hard drinker. You know,
yeah,
I've always got the feeling that's where the good old boys got together in the winter and they went through several jugs boiling sap.
Yeah, my neighbors, it's a big family event and I don't really have an extended family nearby. So and I invite people to come over and they kind of sit around and like, OK, I'm going to go now, you know, and they leave. But I don't have a sugar shack. Mine's just next to the wood pile. You know,
you need to put in a sugar shack.
Yeah, it's on the to-do list there.
This may be the year that I build a, particularly with this this grow light situation now, I build some sort of outbuilding as a small greenhouse or something.
Yeah, your multi-purpose building.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it, and I'm just too lazy to get it done.
Well, you got a lot on your plate. So, I mean, it's like nonstop Rick.
Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of projects going that, you know, people don't hear about, but, one of the things I'm thinking about, I'm actually working at it really hard, is, converting from Evernote to DevonThink, which is a Mac-only product, but it's much more sophisticated database. I've got probably close to 10,000 notes now in my Evernote account, and it's kind of like a Roach Motel. Evernote is, I mean, in a way, things get in there, but it's hard to get things out in an organized manner.
Uh-huh.
And that's been my biggest problem with it. So I've been trying to, convert over to this new system because it is a wonderfully powerful database system.
Cool.
So, all right. And then I've got some products in mind that I want to turn out once I've done that.
The secret world of Rick. Well, cool. Well, I imagine people have reached their destinations here.
I think so. We've been at it about 33 minutes now.
I think, is the average commute 25 minutes or something like that?
I think it is, yeah. And of course, maybe they get in the car and they warm it up a little bit. And maybe they swing by Starbucks or Dunkin' Donut.
All right, cool. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. Thank you for downloading it. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. And it's always good to hear from you. I have a bunch of viewer mail to read, and I will do it. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. radio@gardenfork.tv. Rick, thanks for taking the time.
You bet. And I'm really glad you had a great trip down to Austin and back.
Yeah, food truck food.
And I wouldn't have thought of Austin as a food truck city, but I'm glad you had a great time, and we'll talk to you later, my friend.
All right, see y'all.
Bye-bye.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.